Welcome to Asset Protection Today with attorney Bill Alexander. Thank you so much for being here with us today. I'm Jason Kong alongside attorney Bill Alexander. Bill, how are you doing today?
I'm okay, Jason. How about you?
I'm doing great. Excited for the show. We've got a lot of things going on. You had your webinars this week. Tax day is true. Around the corner, so there's no shortage of things to talk about.
This is true. April 15th is a big day for a lot of folks. And, for all of us, we have to have our taxes paid by the 15th, whether we get an extension on filing our income tax return or not. There's no extension on payment, though. So we have to get our money in. Hopefully we get something back for what we pay in, you know, and that's, I think for the most part we do, not as much as we'd like, but anyway, with that said, while I don't want to complain about income taxes, I do want to complain, today about what I believe is the greatest threat to us and to privacy that we have ever had in this country. And it's called the Corporate Transparency Act. Now, I want to assure folks that I'm not in any way being political about what I'm talking about. In other words, this has nothing to do with President Biden. It has nothing to do with former President Trump. This has everything to do with the United States Congress, the House of Representatives, and the United States Senate. That's where this was passed. It was bipartisan. And it's the worst thing that could happen as it relates. Now, what's it about? It has everything to do with Homeland Security. And this has to do with the requirement for millions of reports to the federal government through the Financial Crimes Network, FinCEN. And now, why am I upset about it? And quite frankly, I'll tell you what I hope the result is. I hope that when people understand what this law requires, that they will be so upset that they will contact their congressman and senator and say, get rid of this law. This is an invasion of our privacy, and it's unneeded, it's unnecessary, the truth is, this act is going to add costs to lots of things that we do. And as I explain how this thing works, you'll understand what I'm talking about. Now, what's it about? You might say, well, this sounds like it has to do with corporations. It actually has to do with small businesses. Now, small businesses typically are organized as either a corporation, subchapter S corporation, or a limited liability company. All right. So, and these companies register with the Secretary of State, and they have to update things with the Secretary of State. We've always had to do that. That's reasonable. But what is the federal government asking us to do now? All right. Well, first of all, you have to understand this. There's over 31 million small businesses in the United States. Now, this is a reporting requirement. They want us to verify everything about us and send it to FinCEN for Homeland Security. And so the question is, how many people or how many companies have actually reported thus far? Well, and all of the businesses that were organized prior to this year have until the end of this year in order to report to the government. Only a little over a million have reported thus far. So that means there's over 30 million companies that sometime probably around October or November, they're going to say, we have to do what? Now, but bottom line is a company that's organized this year has to report within 90 days. But all of the existing companies have to report by the end of this year. And anything organized next year has to report within 30 days. So it's this reporting will actually, in my opinion, affect over 100 million Americans that the federal government wants to know everything about you. And to me, it's an unrealistic invasion of our privacy that they not only want to know us about it, they want us and require us to report on any change within 30 days of the change. And now, the burden on this act is with the company. All right, so what does the company have to report? Company has to report who makes the decision. So who's the president, who's the vice president, or who's the manager. But they want more than that. They also want anybody who owns at least a 25% interest or more in the company. They want to know your business address. They want to know your residence address. They want to know your social security number. They want to have a copy of your driver's license. They want a copy of your passport. Now it gets stickier than that because they want more information. And if any of the information changes, you have to report it within 30 days. Now, what if you fail to report it? There is a fine of $500 per day for failing to report. And there's a criminal sanction of 2 years imprisonment and a $10,000 fine for willful failure to report. So what I'm getting at is there are criminal and civil penalties for not giving the federal government information that they shouldn't have in the first place. But now it gets worse than this. Because let's put an example. Let's say that you're a woman who either owns or has an interest in a small company, an LLC or a sub-S company, which is very common. And you get married, all right? You're planning to get married. Okay, well, with this new law, you better plan to go from the church to DMV to get your new driver's license with your new, you know, assuming that you change your name. Because you have to report that change of name to the federal government within 30 days or you get fined. I mean, the bottom line is, you know, frankly, you better go to DMV and file this report before you go on your honeymoon. Because if you go on your honeymoon, by the time you get back, you won't have time to do this to get the thing in on time. But it gets worse than that because if you have anybody in your company, you know, that's a decision maker, you have to report. So if that person buys a new home, they move, guess what? You have to file that report. Government wants to know about that move within 30 days or you're not in compliance with this law. Now, it gets worse than that because, you know, let's say that you have a trust agreement and you have placed your LLC into your trust as would be the normal estate planning kind of thing. Well, if the trustee owns the small company, then guess what? The federal government wants to know who the grantor of the trust is, who's the trustee of the trust. They want to know who the beneficiaries of your trust are. They want to know if you have a trust protector or someone who can name a trust protector. They want that information. Well, that upsets me because guess what? I'm that person who can name a trust protector in a lot of the trusts that I create. And so the fact is, do I really want to have to report to all of these different companies? If I create a company, you know, if I help a client create an LLC, as the lawyer who actually did your organizing documents, you have a requirement to give my information to the federal government because I had, you know, something to do with organizing your business. And if you didn't have that, but if you had a trust and you placed your LLC in the trust, then again, they want to know that then my information is important to you as well. Well, what I did, and so for the folks out there who you might not own a business, but maybe you're a lawyer who helps clients create a business like an LLC or a corporation, or you're a real estate agent or a realtor who helps people purchase, or you're a closing attorney. Here's the other thing. They're not only asking this, right now they're talking about expanding this onerous law to include real estate transactions. So the point is that the government, under the auspices of Homeland Security, where they're, what are they trying to do? They're trying to find, they're trying to weed out money launderers and terrorists. Well, you know, law-abiding citizens are the only ones who are going to report. And the fact is that they're asking for this information that they don't need. We all know that anytime you give government entities this kind of information, it'll be abused. And quite frankly, it'll be a place where all of this information will be in one place where when hackers get into it, they'll have all of our personal information on everything we do and how we do it. So I'm real upset, as you can tell. But the fact is that we all need to be talking to our congressmen and senators and trying to get rid of this onerous law because it's burdensome. And okay, and just from what I can see, if I help a company organize, you know, through the Secretary of State, if we have to basically make sure that this report gets done, and there's a lot of liability involved in this, guess what? We're going to have to charge more to get these companies off and running. Well, most of us know that not every small business is successful. You know, oftentimes, you know, they come and go. But the fact of the matter is that everything about this law is burdensome to small business. The Chamber of Commerce needs to get involved and get this law taken away. But every person who is involved in these businesses, if this law is not basically taken off the books, you know, come this time next year, people are going to be screaming about it. But for me, it's not a matter of politics. It's a matter of privacy. And, you know, I am a person who cares about privacy and how important that is to every American. The government should not be asking for this kind of information in this way. And And you know, the fact is, when I learned how intrusive this new law is, that's why I'm here talking about the fact that of how awful that this will be and how expensive it will be for folks who are trying to make a living and have a small business to do so.
I can certainly understand why you're so passionate about this bill. What's troubling to me is that, at least in my experience, you're the only one sounding the alarm bells about this. And I think you're right. I think as the year comes to a close, we're going to quickly hear a lot more about this. And I appreciate your perspective, because there's probably not too many people out there who impacts this more than you, because you are a business owner with your practice and you do deal with your clients. So they're dealing with this from another perspective. So really appreciate you laying that out for us, because it's something that should be on everyone's radar. Thank you for that. I want to also remind everyone that we just had our webinars this past Wednesday, but if you're interested in signing up for the May webinars, you can do that now at WGALaw.com. The second Wednesday of every month, WG Alexander & Associates puts on a series of free webinars that everyone can attend from the comfort of their own home. There's two of them that you can attend. The first one, the morning session, deals with long-term care assistance, financial assistance for those families who are dealing with a long-term care crisis. This covers Medicaid, VA benefits, all forms of government assistance available to most middle-class families who are dealing with a long-term care crisis. The afternoon session deals with asset protection and trust planning, which we're really going to get into in just a little bit in this program. So if you're interested in signing up for either of the webinars, there's no cost to do so. It's completely free. You can go to WGALaw.com and click on the seminars button to register and attend. You can also call the office. The phone number is 919-256-7000. 919-256-7000. A quick break and back with more. You're listening to Asset Protection Today with Attorney Bill Alexander. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to Asset Protection Today with Attorney Bill Alexander. Thank you so much for being here with us today. Don't forget, you can go to WGALaw.com to find information about WG Alexander & Associates. If you need to get a hold of an elder law attorney, maybe you've got some documents that you'd like to have reviewed, or maybe you want to set up some documents, get a hold of the team at WG Alexander & Associates at WGALaw.com. WGALaw.com is also where you can go to find information on their free webinars. Next set of webinars is happening on Wednesday, May 8th. Be sure to register at WGALaw.com. Click on the seminars button at the top of the page. I'm Jason Kong here with Bill Alexander. And Bill, we're going to move in a moment to some asset protection topics, but we want to tie a bow on your discussion related to the Corporate Transparency Act, which you are very much not in favor of.
Well, I want this law to be getting rid of, quite frankly. I mean, because I think it's a horrible government intrusion of our privacy as Americans, and quite frankly, it's a Big Brother initiative that, from my perspective, is awful. And as Americans, we shouldn't have to report to the federal government this kind of information. And you know, the Corporate Transparency Act is going to involve probably a third of Americans, and I just think that it's awful. But I wanted to put it in perspective for those lawyers or other professionals that deal with businesses or real estate transaction attorneys, particularly if they change the law to include real estate transactions. But anyone who owns or has anything, any decision making or any significant interest in any small business, then, but particularly for the professionals out there, you should get what's called a FinCEN number. It's applied online through the Financial Crimes Enforcement. That's FinCEN, okay, through the Homeland Security. You can find the website. But what does this do for you? Basically, instead of giving your business owners all of our private information, what you can do is have a FinCEN number, and you give them your full name and your FinCEN number so that they can use that on their report to the government. Now, when you get a FinCEN number, now we're obligated to update our own information on our FinCEN number. So if we move, we got to give that information within 30 days. If we get our driver's license renewed, we need to basically send the government a copy of our driver's license. If we get our passport renewed, we send that to the government through the FinCEN. But in essence, if we have our own FinCEN number, then we report these changes. If we move our residential address, if we move our corporate address, then again, we have to report all of these little changes to the government with verification now. I mean, you can't just report it, you have to verify it. And so, they want scanned copies of your driver's license, your passport, or the like. And so if you're a professional, having a FinCEN number means you don't have to give the business owners that you deal with your Social Security number and your private residential address and your corporate address and all of the other information that they require. You just give them the FinCEN number. So for professionals, that you're out, but then, of course, you have to report to the government yourself to keep your FinCEN number active and proper so they don't find you. But the other thing that I need to mention about this Corporate Transparency Act is, where's the liability? The liability, the $500 a day for noncompliance is with the company, okay? Which means that, okay, you have a shareholder with 25% who moves and doesn't report. And as the company, you're responsible for knowing all of these folks, whether if they move, if they change their name, all of this stuff has to be reported to the federal government within 30 days. And how onerous is that? I mean, shoot, I have lots of clients who I can't get them back in the office within 30 days, let alone to have something that you have verified information that has to be done. But the fines, the civil fines and the criminal liability goes to the companies. And that's scary as well. But like I said, if people should be contacting their representatives and senators when it comes to the Corporate Transparency Act, because we really do need to convince Congress that this is a bad idea. I just think it's so intrusive that it's gotten me real upset.
Also seems just like a massive amount of information that requires, manpower to catalog and to comb through all this stuff. It just seems...
Well, Jason, it's just like you. You have a small company that I helped you create, and because I organized your company for you, you have to report my situation. Your company's liable, and so now I'll give you my FinCEN number, and then I'm responsible for that. But if I didn't have a FinCEN number, you would be required to get all of my personal information, my Social Security number. You'd have to have a copy of my driver's license and a passport and all this stuff that you need to send the government. And, you know, obviously I don't want you to have all that information, so I'm going to give you a FinCEN number, which obviously gets me out, and you don't have to worry about whether I move or sell my house, buy another house, or whether, you know, those kinds of things. But, you know, obviously for other business owners who are small business owners, they have to get all this information. Well, that's a lot of trouble and a lot of work to get information on folks that might have some tangential relationship to your company. But, you know, the fact is I've organized hundreds of companies over the last number of years. And you know, do those folks know that they need my information at this point? No, they don't. You know, come October, November, they're going to be trying to figure out how do they do it. And it's going to cost them money to try to figure out how to report to the government and what their liability is and the whole bit. I really feel bad about what the government is forcing small companies into doing. And small companies are the heart blood of this country. You know, it's where the economy runs or doesn't run. I mean, small business is where it's at. So, I mean, this is going to be horribly burdensome on small business.
Well, we hope that this is something that you keep on your radar and you can stay tuned to us because, you know, I'm sure this is something that we'll continue to talk about because it does impact so many people, whether it's folks who own a business. I mean, that all goes back to asset protection. But also, you know, we mentioned in that first segment when it comes to trust, this is something that if a company resides within a trust, that's something that needs to be on your radar as well.
Well, there's another one that I forgot. When somebody dies, there needs to be a report to FinCEN. If the person who dies is in that list of people that a company needs to report regarding, whether it's the owner, manager, trustee, whatever, it's got to be reported to the government within 30 days. And again, the company is the one that's responsible for this. And you think about it. I mean, frankly, most people don't even go see a lawyer within 30 days of someone dying. It's hard enough getting through the initial phases of having to deal with someone's death and the funeral and or funeral arrangements and all the other stuff. I mean, who's going to think about making sure you file that FinCEN report? But again, attorneys who handle estates better be ready for these FinCEN reports because they're going to be required.
Well, if you're as passionate about this as Bill is, get a hold of your elected officials. Let them know how you feel with regard to the Corporate Transparency Act. Want to remind everyone that if you're interested in attending one of the free webinars happening on Wednesday, May 8th, go ahead and register now. It's free to do so, free to attend. You can go to WGALaw.com and click on the seminars button at the top of the page. You can learn more about asset protection and trust planning. You can also learn more about long-term care assistance, Medicaid, VA benefits. It's free to do so. There's no cost to you. Learn more from Bill and the team at WG Alexander & Associates by going to WGALaw.com and clicking on the seminars button at the top of the page. We're taking a short break, but we'll be back with more. This is Asset Protection Today with Attorney Bill Alexander. We'll be right back after this. This is Asset Protection Today with Attorney Bill Alexander. WGALaw.com is where you can go To find information about WG Alexander & Associates, the team there, their expertise, if you are interested in speaking with an elder law attorney, WGALaw.com is where you want to go. Or if maybe if you have some documents that you would like to have reviewed by an elder law attorney, we'd highly recommend that. Again, go to WGALaw.com, and if you're interested in attending their free webinars that they do the second Wednesday of every month, you can click on the seminars button at WGALaw.com. Learn more about long-term care assistance for families dealing with a long-term care crisis. This is very helpful information for those who are looking for government assistance, whether it's Medicaid, VA benefits, forms of financial assistance available to most middle-class families. Learn all about it by going to WGALaw.com and clicking on the seminars button at the top of the page. I'm Jason Kong here with Bill Alexander. And Bill, it's the name of the show. Let's get to some asset protection.
Well, I wanted to mention particularly asset protection through trusts. Now, some basics, you know, always important. Most folks, when they do trust planning, they create a revocable trust, often called a living trust or a revocable living trust. A revocable trust is a great planning tool, but while you're alive and well with a revocable trust, it gives you no asset protection whatsoever. You're basically on your own. You need liability insurance the way you always have, and you should always have liability insurance because it's the cornerstone of any kind of asset protection plan. But a revocable trust does not give you any protection because you can put property in or take it out of a revocable trust at any time. Now, an irrevocable trust can, but doesn't always, but it can and should, in my book, give you asset protection. Now, the strongest asset protection trust that can be created is what's called a third-party trust. It's a trust where you create an entity, a trust, if you will, for someone else. In other words, a third party. If you try to create a trust for yourself, that doesn't work in North Carolina. That's a first party trust. In other words, you're creating a trust for yourself. A revocable trust is a first party trust, and it's revocable, but it gives you no asset protection. But when you create a trust for your spouse or your child, children, grandchildren, someone other than yourself, you can do so and give those folks protection from creditors, predators, divorces, and the like. The key word in terms of how a trust is administered, if it's one that you want to have asset protection with it, is the word discretion. My trustee has absolute discretion as to whether to distribute income or principal to my beneficiary. Now, frankly, if you say something other than that, if you say my trustee shall pay all the income to my spouse during his or her lifetime, then the income is not going to be protected because they are entitled to it. If they're entitled to the income, then a creditor can reach that income and take it from them. The same is true of principal. If the trust document says my trustee shall distribute 5% of the principal each year to, then that 5% is going to be unprotected. So it depends on the wording that's used in the trust and the guidance that's given as to whether or not the trust will actually give asset protection. Now, there is a particular type of trust that I recommend regularly. You don't have to be rich to where an asset protection trust can come into play. For instance, if your spouse is really sick, let's say you're in your 80s and your spouse has some debilitating diseases. It might be dementia, it might be MS, it might be something else, but they're Parkinson's, it could be lots of different things where you're basically helping to take care of your spouse, and you're doing okay yourself, but what I recommend often in those cases is number one, to transfer the assets that they both have. Now, I'm assuming some things here, but I like to put the home in the healthy spouse's name, and most of the money and those kinds of things. It's there. That spouse is typically managing thing at this point anyway. But I want that spouse to create a trust in their last will and testament. And it's called a supplemental needs trust. It's irrevocable. But now, obviously, a will-based trust does not exist while you're alive. It only comes into being upon your death, and you probate the will, and you've generally named one of your children as the trustee for your spouse who's sick, because your spouse couldn't manage things if you died anyway. Well, a supplemental needs trust, if it's written properly, it is wonderful, because oftentimes your spouse, if you die, they can't continue to live in the home by themselves. They need assisted living or nursing care at that point, because you're no longer there to take care of them. Well, guess what? If it's a supplemental needs trust, then it works with Medicaid. There's no 5-year look back. There's no penalty, no sanction for creating the trust for your spouse. Everything in the trust is non-countable. So oftentimes, the spouse is either immediately eligible for Medicaid, or they, with very little planning, they can be eligible for Medicaid, because everything in your trust is not accountable asset. It's all exempt. It's all protected. There's no Medicaid estate recovery upon the death of your spouse. So whatever is left in the trust at your death, or at their death, can go to your children or grandchildren exactly the way you want to, without any worries of creditors, predators, or Medicaid estate recovery. So that type of supplemental needs trust can be extremely important. And let's say that the only asset that you have is your home. Well, guess what? If your spouse can't live in your home anymore, and you own the trust, the house by yourself, at your death, the house would go into the trust. The trustee could sell the house, and all the money from the sale of the house would be available to help take care of your spouse. But and you have almost immediate eligibility for Medicaid under those circumstances. And then whatever's left over at your spouse's death can then be distributed to the children and grandchildren. So there are lots and lots of advantages for couples who have situations like that, where a little pre-planning can go a long, long way. Of course, the other document that's so important to make plans work is having the right kind of general durable power of attorney. The ones we prepare in almost every case is what we call enhanced general durable powers of attorney, because they have very, very broad powers and allows us, while both are living, to move property around, to get it the way we need it, to protect it. That's what asset protection's all about. And so that's just one way, through changing your will, to create an irrevocable trust for your spouse at your death. Now, frankly, most times the healthy spouse outlives the sick spouse. But, you know, that's something that we can't predict. We have no control over that. And it happens regularly that people surprise us and die unexpectedly. So this kind of planning can make a big difference.
It's never too early to start planning. If you would like to speak with an elder law attorney, get a hold of WG Alexander & Associates. Go to wgalaw.com to learn more. You can find information as well about their free webinars if you would like to attend the Asset Protection and Trust Planning webinar that's happening on Wednesday, May 8th. You can go to wgalaw.com, click on the seminars button at the top of the page. It's free to register, free to attend. There's also a webinar dedicated to long-term care assistance if you are interested in that. Again, go to wgalaw.com, click on the seminars button at the top of the page. A quick break and back. You're listening to Asset Protection Today with Attorney Bill Alexander. We'll be right back after this. You're listening to Asset Protection Today with Attorney Bill Alexander. Learn more about WG Alexander & Associates online at wgalaw.com. Jason Kong here with Bill Alexander. Bill, we've got some more asset protection items to get to.
No question about it. And folks who've listened to me for a while know that I regularly talk about how the way you own title to things and how you arrange your beneficiary designations need to link up with your legal documents so that it works together and not against each other. Well, this is true when you create a supplemental needs trust for your spouse. One of the things that I mentioned, you want to move the title to the house to the healthy spouse so that your supplemental needs trust will work and the house could be sold and the money protected in this trust if you should die first. The same is true for most of your money. You can move it into an account in your name and link it to a joint account with your spouse so your spouse has access to money as well, if they can manage it at all. You know, nobody wants to be where they don't have access to money, but you can arrange it to where it works. And of course, if your unhealthy spouse dies first, then everything's arranged. Don't forget your beneficiary designations. If you have life insurance, more than likely your spouse is the beneficiary. You need to change it to the trustee of your supplemental needs trust. And if you do that, you're lining up your titles and your beneficiary to make your legal documents work the way you want them to work.
You don't want to have your plans blown up by one oversight. Get an elder law attorney to review your documents, sit down with you, and make sure that your plan is in working order with all of these things lined up and working in harmony so that your plans work as you intend them to. You can go to wgalaw.com if you would like to get a hold of someone on the team at WG Alexander & Associates, or you can call 919-256-7000. We're taking a short break, but we'll be right back. This is Asset Protection Today with Attorney Bill Alexander. We'll be back after this. This is Asset Protection Today with Attorney Bill Alexander. Go to wgalaw.com, click on the seminars button at the top of the page so you can register for the next set of webinars happening on Wednesday, May 8th. It's free to register, free to attend. If you would like to learn more about long-term care assistance, Medicaid, VA benefits, or asset protection and trust planning, wgalaw.com is the place to go. Click on the seminars button at the top of the page to learn more or call 919-256-7000. 256 7000-919-256. 7000. On behalf of Bill Alexander, I'm Jason Kong. Thanking you so much for listening today. You have been listening to Asset Protection Today with attorney Bill Alexander. Have a wonderful weekend.